Our speaker today is one of our own, a member of this congregation, Walt Staton. Most of you know that Walt is awaiting a judge's sentence next month. Walt was charged with and convicted by a jury of the federal crime of littering, the crime of leaving water bottles on the desert so that crossers of that barren and lonely land, sojourners for the most part, mainly poor and valiant from nations to the south, so that they would not perish in the desert. This fall, Walt will begin studies at Claremont School of Theology on the way to becoming a UU minister. Walt was born in Prescott, attended the Prescott UU Fellowship here in Arizona. After graduation from high school in 2000, he moved to Tucson to attend the University of Arizona, from which he was graduated in 2004 with a Bachelor of Science degree in Regional Development. At present, he works in a small print shop doing graphic design and book publishing. Walt, we're all looking forward to hearing from you.
I've been invited to take the pulpit today, and I'm grateful for this opportunity. Many people have asked if I would speak about my work with No More Deaths and this littering ticket that I was on trial for this summer. So woven in with some other things that are on my mind, I'll give it my best shot. I would like to extend a welcome to the youth group. They just returned from Nicaragua. I was able to go with them last summer. It's a very dedicated group of young people, and I've been just so happy to get to work with them over the past couple years. So as the brilliant song written by David Gilmour of Pink Floyd makes so clear, we must not turn away from the suffering in the world. That is a lesson I began to learn at a very early age when I attended a UU church as a child. I vividly remember the lessons I learned in Sunday school about how people in other countries didn't have the same access to resources that I had. I was taught about hunger and suffering in the world, and that always disturbed me. So it's no surprise that, as an adult, I have sought out a lot of social justice work, not just as a hobby or a pastime, but as a lifestyle. So that brings us to today's reading. The words of the reading were spoken by Subcomandante Marcos after a long listening session held just south of Nogales a couple years ago. The meeting was focused on hearing the stories of Native, Indigenous, and Indigenous people of the Sonoran Desert of this region. For hours, representatives from those groups shared their struggles. The border was a specific topic of concern. The Tohono O'odham elders spoke of a new wall built right through the middle of their lands, restricting their ability to travel and visit family and perform ceremonies. Marcos's story talks about the creation of women and men, saying that the gods used corn to create people so that they would have hearts made of corn. And when the gods ran out of corn, the hearts were left empty. The story tells us that some of those empty hearts were filled with money. But more important than the creation of man and women is what they're charged to do. A time will come when the earth grows tired and it needs these men and women to help it survive. I believe that the land in this region is indeed growing tired. Let us take a look at a brief history lesson of the last few hundred years of the Sonoran Desert. First, cattle were brought here. Now, this is no place for a cow to survive. The poor creatures, I can't imagine having to figure out a living in the Sonoran Desert, but nonetheless, this land was heavily grazed. Erosion turned surface streams into deep gullies, and non-native species of grasses were brought in to try to control the erosion. Those grasses took over and then caused other problems. Alongside with the ranching came mining, and the earth was tore open and spilled out. The chemicals that were used and the mine tailings that have been left behind have now leached all kinds of toxins and heavy metals into our streams and lakes. And then the developers came, scraping away the surface and taking out the saguaro and replacing it with stick and stucco and putting greens. By the 1950s, the rivers that we had here began to disappear underneath the sand. And the only memory we even have of those rivers now are concrete-lined banks. And if all that wasn't enough, the desert is now under attack by those who build borders. At first, the border was just a barbed wire fence with a few survey markers. Today, it's a fully militarized zone marked with hundreds of miles of walls stretching from one ocean to another, patrolled by four-wheel drive trucks, ATVs, helicopters, and camera towers that are powered by generators 24 hours a day. Crossing this fortified line in the sand are thousands upon thousands of families and individuals, and they too are leaving behind personal belongings and trash. Clearly, our desert is in pain. So I would like to talk a little bit about the action I took on these ransacked lands. You all have heard much about it. I was with three others placing gallon jugs of water on several trails that I know that migrants use while they're crossing the desert to get into the United States. We were originally spotted by a Border Patrol agent. That agent began tracking us and following us around for a couple hours. He called in a helicopter, and the helicopter circled us to verify that we were indeed humanitarians putting out water, vicious crime criminals. The Border Patrol agent called the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge office, and they dispatched one of their law enforcement, who came out and tracked us down as well. As we were returning from our final water drop of the day, we approached the side of the road, and there waiting for us were the Border Patrol agent and the Fish and Wildlife officer. They asked us, had we been putting out water? Well, of course we had. That's what we do. We're humanitarians. So after a good hour of going back and picking up the water and this and that, he issued all of us littering citations for putting out this water. I contested the ticket. I refused to pay the fine. It's a $175 fine. I was brought before a judge last winter, and they officially charged me with knowingly littering, premeditated littering. I knew in advance I was going to do this, and I did. I never denied that. This summer, in the beginning of June, a 12-person jury was assembled, and they found me guilty of littering after a long 2-day trial. Maybe it doesn't seem that long. It was long for me. And in a few weeks, on August 11th, here at the federal courthouse downtown, I will be sentenced by that judge. On the final day of the trial, after the closing arguments were made and the jury was sent off to begin their deliberations, I was feeling the weight of everything on me. I stood up and I was walking back to the exit in the back of the courtroom and walked through the crowd of people that was there. Someone handed me a little piece of paper with a little bit of tape on it. The paper had a drawing of a water jug, and underneath the water jug it said, litter or life. I was struck by the simplicity of that statement, and I immediately stuck it to my shirt. Many others were also wearing them. Litter or life. As I already shared, I grew up in a UU church, and as you all know, a key part of religious education for our children is to teach all the world's religions and beliefs. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism. You can imagine the difficulty of, for myself and our young children, trying to sort through all these different teachings and figure out what makes sense. The ones that made sense to me as a young child were the teachings that we learned that came from Native American traditions. Simply put, it was to take care of the earth, and that the earth was our mother. Maintaining harmony with the land was essential to maintaining spiritual harmony with ourselves. This was a theology I could grasp, and more importantly, I could use it as a guide for my life. It is the theology that is reflected in Marcos' story, recounting the story of creation passed down by his elders. We are created from food produced from the earth, and in turn, there may be a time when we are called upon to protect the earth when it grows tired. This became very important to me as this whole littering case unfolded. All the complexities of the legal system, especially at the federal level, sent my mind spinning. What I needed were these simple teachings to keep my heart at ease during all these times. Let the lawyers and let the judges do all the hard stuff. My lawyer made an impassioned argument that the water jugs that I put out were not garbage. They were items of value, and they had an intended purpose. They were purchased from a grocery store and intentionally placed in specific locations. And furthermore, we had plans to go back to those places and pick up the empty jugs, clean up our trash. The prosecutor tried to make it look like my actions were part of some sinister plot to break the law, one plastic jug at a time. He tried to prove that I had some callous disregard for the environment. It went back and forth like that, with the judge continually restricting what I could present to defend myself. It was madness, dressed up in fancy suits and ties and a robe. But my argument, the place where I was speaking from, my argument was the simple one. And as our song said, I wasn't turning away. Given the suffering and the numbers of deaths here in our desert, calling this water garbage is an insult, not just to me, but to the mothers and fathers and brothers and cousins and nieces who have suffered and died of dehydration. If the water is litter, then are these people also litter? We're talking about people with value and purpose, people who are making a powerful statement, who refuse to continue living in hopeless, degrading conditions. So they take a great risk to move to a new place to pursue their dreams. This is life, beautiful life. And since the water jugs are intended for sustaining life, they cannot possibly be litter or garbage. So then what is the litter? The border here is enforced by what they call a policy of deterrence, the idea that the harshness of the desert will prevent people from trying to cross. That idea, that policy, that's trash. It belongs in the dumpster. There's a belief that a wall and an army will solve a problem rooted in economics and human rights. That's junk. It's no good. We need to get rid of it. The words of hate, which we hear from our newspapers and our TVs and our radios, that's garbage. All the stuff that is cluttering up our minds with fear, we need to clean it up and throw it all away. All this stuff fits the definition of garbage much more closely than do water jugs. We should take a trip to the landfill, taking all the bad legislation, laws, ideas, and policies on this border with us. It's an absolute mess out there. We need to clean it up. So this isn't about a few water jugs. This is about a system and a policy that thinks it's okay to use a vast desert as a weapon against men and women and parents and children. We should be issuing littering citations to the people who had the audacity to think this up and implement it. Give them the tickets. Besides, I think they could afford the $175 fine. So no wonder the land here is tired and weary. From overgrazing to militarization, the earth is under assault. I believe that the earth wants life, not death, and in this moment it needs our help. So let us continue moving forward, living out this church's mission to have love and compassion cross all borders. We can take an active role in showing our care for all life, human, plant, and animal, by going after the real garbage on the border, fear and hate and intolerance. I hope my actions will demonstrate what one person can do, and I wasn't alone either. I should remember that it wasn't just me getting a littering ticket. There were three others. Those charges were dropped. And before me, another who actually is here today in the back, and he represents the Sierra Club, a convicted litterer working for the Sierra Club. And he has a table if you want to look for more information while the Sierra Club stuff back there. They're also fighting the bad policies of the garbage and the bad policies of deterrence on our border. So I think we have some powerful tools here at our fingertips. The first and the foremost is our faith. My own faith journey has been a roller coaster. Like I said, I attended the UU church as a child, but in junior high, I left the church behind for Boy Scouts. Through high school and college, I distanced myself more and more from any faith. And by the end of college, there was not a single good thing I could think or say about a church or religion. And then I stumbled upon No More Deaths, a group that claimed to be faith-based. At first, I thought these people were foolish. I only knew about the church's dark side, the side that led conquistadors to the Americas, raping and ransacking and pillaging in the name of God. Hadn't the church caused enough pain and suffering? Wasn't it time for secular society to just come in and fix all these problems? Well, it turns out there's some problems with secular society, too. The guilty verdict for my littering charge showed that. Secular society hadn't quite figured out where its own moral foundations could lie. There are no laws and rules in our secular society that order us to practice love and compassion. Our Constitution doesn't have a 10-point bill of right relations. While we learn about math and history and science in school, it's from religion that we learn how to care and heal and nurture. So I stuck with No More Deaths, and I discovered a very important concept. Justice doesn't have much backbone without faith. And that's why No More Deaths is a faith-based group that's always been tied to a church. It's never been a standalone nonprofit. It's always been a ministry. And it's why, for me, joining No More Deaths has made me a proud born-again Unitarian and brought me back. Faith also reminds us to be humble, and I think this is extremely important. In the past month, you've probably seen that No More Deaths was mentioned in the cover story on the Tucson Weekly. You've seen us in the UU World magazine and their website. We've been on the op-ed pages of the Daily Star and on various TV stations. Right now, No More Deaths members, well, just this past week, we've met with high-ranking government officials. We met with the Border Czar, and tomorrow, six of our members are flying out to Washington, D.C. to meet with Ken Salazar, the Secretary of the Interior. You should be proud that No More Deaths is a ministry of this church, Unitarian Universalist Church of Tucson. It's quite a remarkable humanitarian organization, and it's accomplished much. At the same time, we should be wary of letting ourselves get too wrapped up in all this glitz and glory. We don't want to become too attached. We need to remain committed to this because it's the right thing to do, not because it gets us good headlines. So let me share with you my secret hope. This is the hope that I think many of us who have spent a lot of time in No More Deaths harbor. It's something that I pray for every single day. I want No More Deaths to go out of business. We have to close this operation down. I hate the idea of having to keep doing this humanitarian stuff year after year. Unfortunately, No More Deaths seems to have found a niche in a growth industry of death and suffering. So what we need, though, is an unbusiness plan. It may seem odd that in a time when many nonprofits are struggling just to stay open, that we should be struggling to close down. But No More Deaths is not a nonprofit organization. We're a group of people of conscience and faith who won't turn away, no matter what our budget looks like. We're internally programmed to care, despite that no laws exist that force us to care, and there's no courts that are going to make us guilty if we don't help out people who are in need. The only way to put ourselves out of business is to get rid of the demand. In other words, no more suffering. Our unbusiness plan needs to include things like addressing the root causes of migration, like the economic treaties that lead to trade inequalities. We need to roll back border militarization. Maybe we can even start taking down parts of this border wall. As far as I can tell, that bad trade agreements mean displaced people, and that's good for our line of work. Then more walls mean more deaths, and that's also good. So we need to get rid of both of those things. We need to put ourselves out of business. Maybe you all have some other ideas that can contribute to a successful unbusiness plan. And now the bad news. As Gilbert already shared, I'm leaving to go to school this fall in a month. So I won't be here, even though I wanted to be here, to help us carry out our unbusiness plan. I think it's going to be a difficult task to put No More Deaths out of business, and it requires commitment from all of us to see it through. But I will be off doing something that I hope will lead towards my ability to contribute to the unbusiness plan maybe in the future if it's not done right away. But if I come back as a UU minister, maybe we'll see what happens. That's 3 years away. But so therefore, this work is left up to you. The immense task of cleaning up the political garbage on the border so that humanitarian volunteers no longer have to swelter in the heat of our camp in the summer and use a 5-gallon bucket as a toilet, so that we no longer have to open our newspapers and read about body after body, week after week, so the ecosystem of the Sonoran Desert can undertake a long process of healing. I want to reach out to you all as people of faith and conscience to put a high value on the lives of the men and women who are migrating all over the world. I want us to put a high value on our faith because it teaches us the lessons of love and asks us to be humble. I want us to put a high value on our own actions, whatever it is that we can do. What I don't want is for us to feel suffocated by the weight of this situation. Looking at what I've talked about, today, helping to heal the lands of the Sonoran Desert by getting rid of the garbage that is our current policy, and putting no more deaths out of business by addressing the root causes of migration. These are no simple tasks. Some of us can put more energy towards these goals than others. Many of us have jobs and families and other commitments for our time. So I don't expect that everyone can just spend a week at our camp or go through a federal trial. But what I do know is this: the love and the compassion and the support that I received from members of this church was invaluable to my ability to follow through with my actions. There was a lot of stress and frustrations going through that trial, and you all helped carry me through that. Many of you have offered words of support to me here after church, or emailed me and called me. Of course, our minister is behind this 100%, and the enthusiasm of the youth group has always helped keep me going as well. When I was testifying up on the witness stand in the court, and I looked out behind the lawyers and jury and all the craziness up front, there were a lot of the same faces that I look out and see here today who were there in that courtroom supporting not just me, but supporting our humanitarian efforts. And I thank you all for showing up and being there. So that is our capacity for positive change as a group of people who aren't turning away. We're already making a significant impact on an impossible situation just by supporting each other. So I want to thank you all for welcoming me into this congregation. Thank you for being here to help urge me along, and thank you for not turning away. And I know that our paths will continue to cross, and that someday we can come together and talk about how No More Deaths was a ministry of our church. We can just talk about it as a memory. So thank you, and blessings to all of you, and amen.